Hello and welcome along to F1 Rewind, the podcast where we delve into the Formula One archives to bring you the stories and events which happened on each day in motorsport history. Hello everyone, welcome once again to F1 Rewind, second episode of the week, and I've got quite a few interesting bits of F1 history for you today on the 28th of February. It's the day on which the word Dord was removed from the dictionary in 1939, the day on which 125 million Americans tuned into the final episode of TV series MASH in 1983, and the day that the Winter Olympics came to a close in Vancouver in 2010. It's also the day that a number of incidents occurred at Melbourne's Albert Park track, the day that one of America's greatest racing drivers was born in 1940, and the day on which the 107% rule was abolished in 2003. But before we get into all of that, you may be thinking,
What are you talking about the word Dord being removed from the dictionary? Dord isn't even a word.
Well, exactly, dear listener. That was the problem. It's known as a ghost word, having been accidentally created by staff compiling the dictionary. It's slotted in between Dorcopsis, a type of small kangaroo, and Dore, meaning golden in colour. On this day in 1939, they realised that the word Dord lacked any etymological history, and after investigating, it was found to have been added in error. It was completely removed from the dictionary 8 years later. So that's the Dord business settled. Let's get on with the show. Here are all the stories and events from motorsport history on the 28th of February. We kick off today's podcast with Albert Scherer, who was born on this day in 1908. The Swiss driver appeared in just one Grand Prix, the 1953 Swiss Grand Prix. Like a lot of other drivers at the time, the Basel-based businessman raced purely as a hobby and had plenty of success in national races and hill climb events through the 1940s and 1950s. Scherer entered the 1953 Swiss Grand Prix held at Circuit Bremgarten in a HWM car. After qualifying 18th and 27.3 seconds down on pole sitter Juan Manuel Fangio on the 7.2-kilometre track, Scherer crashed in the race and lost 16 laps to the leaders. He was still running at the end and finished 9th in the order, but did not complete enough laps to be classified. Scherer then returned to national racing, with his last notable result being a win in the Hollandville's hill climb in 1956. He died in July 1986 at the age of 78. French racing driver Elie Bail was born on the 28th of February 1914. Bail's career started relatively late in 1950 when he competed in Formula 2 races and hill climb events. He made 8 appearances in Formula 1 races, starting with the 1952 Italian Grand Prix, from which he retired. Bail would finish only 2 races in his career, the 1954 Argentine Grand Prix, in which he scored 2 points with a 5th place result, and the 1956 Monaco Grand Prix, where his Gordini car finished in 6th place, with him sharing the drive with André Pellet. In 1955, Bail suffered a serious head injury in practice for the Le Mans 24-hour race after his car flipped. Thankfully, he recovered, but retired from racing after his last F1 appearance at Monaco in 1956. One of motorsport's most famous names celebrates their 80th birthday today. Mario Andretti was born in Italy on this day in 1940. He's one of only 2 drivers, alongside Dan Gurney, to have won races in F1, IndyCar, the World Sports Car Championship and NASCAR. Andretti made 128 starts in F1 and won the 1978 World Championship, remaining the last American to be crowned world champion. His F1 career lasted from 1968 to 1982. During that time, he won 12 races and took 19 podium finishes, driving for the likes of Lotus, Ferrari, Alfa Romeo and Williams. Andretti's IndyCar career lasted even longer, and he was the first driver to win races in the series in four different decades, with his final win coming in 1993, at the age of 53. Next up, Ingar Hoffmann, who celebrates his 67th birthday today. The Brazilian racing driver made his name in F3 in 1975, with the support of Wilson Fittipaldi. Hoffmann moved up to F1 in 1976 with the Fittipaldi-owned Copasuka team. The team was suffering financial problems that year and could only afford to run one car, meaning that Hoffmann sat on the sidelines for much of the season as Emerson Fittipaldi drove their only chassis. In 1976, Hoffmann was entered into four races, but only qualified for one, his home Grand Prix at the start of the year, where he finished 11th. He'd make two more appearances at the start of 1977, retiring in Argentina and finishing a best ever 7th on his final F1 appearance at his home event. He raced in Formula 2 for the next two seasons, but returned home in 1979, where he competed in the Brazilian Stock Car Championship. Proving he definitely had the talent, Hoffmann won the title in this category 12 times, breaking pretty much every record along the way. After 30 seasons and over 100 wins, he retired in 2008. The last of today's birthdays is Sebastian Bourdais, who was born on the 28th of February 1979. He arrived in Formula 1 in 2008, having won the last four successive Champ Car seasons. Bourdais had first tested an F1 car back in 2002 and signed to drive for Arrows in 2003, but, as you'll hear later in this episode, Arrows went out of business before the start of the 2003 season. Bourdais went on to test for Renault in 2006, and then tested with Toro Rosso in 2007. It was with Toro Rosso that Bourdais made his Grand Prix debut at the 2008 Australian Grand Prix. Luck was rarely on Bourdais' side. The Frenchman was running in fourth on debut when his engine failed, and he retired. With it being a race of attrition though, Bourdais was classified in 7th and scored 2 points in his first race. More unluckiness followed later in the season when he was on course for a podium finish at the Belgian Grand Prix before rain saw the cars on wet tyres pass by him and he once again finished only 7th. And then, 1 week later, Bourdais qualified 4th for the Italian Grand Prix, but he couldn't find first gear on the grid and had to start from the pit lane. To add insult to injury, he finished the race a lap down on the winner, his teammate Sebastian Vettel. Bourdais stayed at Toro Rosso for 2009, but a run of disappointing results saw him axed from the team after the German Grand Prix. Two former drivers have died on the 28th of February, and first up is Tim Mayer, who died on this day in 1964. Tim Mayer was the younger brother of McLaren co-founder Teddy Mayer and started racing while studying English literature at Yale University. Both brothers moved from the USA to Europe in the early 1960s. Tim entered his only F1 race at the 1962 United States Grand Prix. He lined up 12th on the grid at the Watkins Glen circuit and retired after 31 laps. Mayer drove for McLaren in the 1964 Tasman Series, the inaugural championship of the series and the first championship in which the McLaren team raced. Tragically, Mayer would be killed in practice for the final round of the championship on this day in 1964. Had he not died, it seems that Mayer could have been an integral part of the new McLaren F1 team alongside his brother and Bruce McLaren. Charles Pozzi died on this day in 2001 at the grand old age of 91. The French racing driver participated in only one World Championship race, in 1950. Pozzi traded in luxury cars after the Second World War, and later in life became the official French importer of Ferraris and Maseratis, meaning that his name appeared on many racing cars. Pozzi didn't start racing until he was 37. He won the Comminges Grand Prix in 1949. The following year, he appeared at the French Grand Prix and drove 14 laps before Louis Rossier took over the car. Rossier drove the car to 6th place over the next 42 laps. After his very brief F1 spell, Pozzi went on to win the Casablanca 12-hour race in 1952. 2 years after his death, in 2003, Pozzi's company was acquired by Ferrari. On to today's headlines, and first up, the 28th of February hasn't been a particularly great day in Albert Park's history. Firstly, on this day in 1997, oil was dumped onto the Melbourne track as part of a protest. In its early years, the F1 race in Albert Park was a thorny subject for some locals, with the Save Albert Park group carrying out multiple protests about the sport visiting the picturesque park. However, the group denied any involvement in this particular incident, where the culprits had poured oil over a 500-metre stretch of the circuit's main straight, just weeks before the 1997 season was due to start at the track. Jeff Kennett, the then Premier of Victoria, called it an act of bastardry. What a great word. Bastardry. Anyway, sorry. And things were even worse in 2002, when it was reported that just days before the 2002 Australian Grand Prix, shots had been fired at a security guard working at the circuit. The incident happened at 3 a.m. near the track's medical centre, with a balaclava-clad intruder making a swift escape. Thankfully, nobody was injured, but the matter was investigated by Victoria State Police. It hasn't all been bad for Albert Park on this day. In 2009, John Brumby, who was the Premier of Victoria, rubbished reports that the Australian Grand Prix would be moving away from Melbourne. According to reports, a new circuit had been planned at Avalon Airport, which would be cheaper to operate than Albert Park. Brumby told the press, "I saw the speculation about it, but I think the GP itself, they're pretty happy with where they are, so I don't think it has gone any further than the feasibility study." Albert Park has been the home of the Australian Grand Prix since 1996 and will celebrate its 25th World Championship race in just a few weeks' time. Talking of rumoured new venues, on the same day, Italian press reported that Max Mosley would tour Rome, adding to speculation that the Grand Prix circuit was to head to the Italian capital for a street race. Bernie Eccleston reportedly told the mayor of Rome that it would be feasible to host a Rome Grand Prix as early as 2013. F1 is still yet to race there, though. On this day a year earlier, Bernie had claimed that he was trying to arrange a Grand Prix in Paris to replace the French Grand Prix at Magny-Cours. Eccleston said,
"We need a place for the French Grand Prix because we are not going back to Magny-Cours."
Just like Rome, this never happened either, and after the French Grand Prix fell off the calendar for 2009, it would not reappear for almost a decade. Though Formula One failed to visit Paris or Rome, Formula E has since held races in both cities. On this day in 2001, Minardi launched their new car just 2 days before the opening practice session of the season. The team launched the PS01 in the presence of drivers Fernando Alonso and Tasso Marquez in Melbourne. It launched without many sponsorship stickers, with the team admitting that it was still on the hunt for a title sponsor. Paul Stoddart had bought the team from Gabriele Rumi just months before the start of the season, and the new car was hurriedly put together. The car at the launch was Alonso's chassis. Marquez's car was still being put together at the Australian Grand Prix. Stoddart had low expectations heading into the race, saying,
"Even if just one of the cars finishes the race on Sunday, then for us it will be like winning the World Championship."
Alonso did finish the race on his debut, in 12th place, 2 laps down on the leaders. The team didn't score any points through the season, but the car was more competitive than many had thought it would be, with Alonso able to show his potential in lower midfield battles. On the same day as Minardi's launch, the Prost team revealed a new livery. The car retained its usual blue colour, with team owner Alain Prost commenting,
"I feel we are finally ready to step up and achieve credible gains this year. I am confident that Prost Grand Prix and its partners will see positive results from the very first races of the season."
The team had put in some impressive lap times with Jean Alesi in pre-season testing, but it turned out that the car had been running underweight, and fast lap times were pumped in to attract sponsors. How bad was Prost's financial situation? Well, on this day, 1 year later, the defunct team's assets were sold to Arrow's boss, Tom Walkinshaw. Cross Grand Prix was declared bankrupt in January 2002, with debts of around $28 million. And talking of Tom Walkinshaw, on this day in 2003, a judge declared that he had been in over his head running a Formula One team. It came just a month after the Arrows team entered liquidation. They missed the last five races of the 2002 season, and staff were laid off in December. With both Prost and Arrows out of business, the sport was down to 10 teams, a number which it would remain at until 2006. Minardi weren't the only team worrying about their chances for the new season on this day in history. In 2002, Ove Andersson, team principal of the new Toyota team, said he'd be happy to see his team's cars line up on the grid. Toyota's rivals were sceptical about how the team kept playing down their chances in the pre-season, given how strong and reliable their engine had proved to be in testing. Toyota's drivers Mika Salo and Alan McNish qualified 14th and 16th for the race, and Salo went on to pick up a point with a 6th place finish. While it turned out to be one of only 2 points scored that season by the team, they can claim to be one of only a handful of teams to have scored on debut. It's a feat which has been repeated only 3 times since, by Red Bull, Brawn GP and Haas. It was a busy news day on the 28th of February 2001. Aside from car launches and livery reveals, Michael Schumacher had a choice to make: use Bell helmets or switch to Schubert helmets and pay $1.1 million in damages per day. Sports Europe, a Belgian-based distributor of Bell helmets, claimed that Schumacher signed a contract to wear their helmets until the end of 2001. Schumacher had been using Schubert helmets in pre-season testing at Barcelona because, his lawyers claimed, they were the safest available option. In a press release 2 weeks later, Ferrari said that an agreement between the two parties had been settled and Schumacher would use the new Schubert brand for the 2001 season. Sports Europe said that they were glad to have found a friendly solution to the controversy. A couple of rule changes have been implemented, or rather suggested, on this day in history, and the first is the abolishment of the 107% rule. The 107% rule was introduced in 1996 and meant that anyone who did not set a time within 107% of the pole sitter's lap time would not be allowed to start the race. The new qualifying format introduced for 2003 was a single lap format, in which the drivers set lap times with the fuel on which they would start the race on board. That meant that potentially there would be a greater disparity between the fastest and slowest times. Thus, the 107% rule was abolished. The rule was eventually brought back in 2011 with a slight tweak. The rule now only applies to Q1, where all drivers must set a lap time within 107% of whoever was fastest in that session. Exceptions are made in changeable weather conditions or for other similar circumstances. Since its reintroduction, there have been just 2 races where drivers have fallen foul of the rule. Those occasions were for both HRT cars at the 2011 and 2012 Australian Grand Prix. The other rule change suggested on this day was that for 2012, the pit lane speed limit would be reduced to just 60 kilometres per hour. The pit lane speed limit had been introduced in 1994, where drivers were limited to 80 kilometres per hour in practice and 120 kilometres per hour in the race. For 2004, that limit became 100 kilometres per hour for all sessions, and in 2012 it was suggested that it be lowered to 60 kilometres per hour for all sessions. However, this proposal was rejected by the FIA just 1 day after this story emerged. Charlie Whiting said there was no evidence that the speed limit already being used was unsafe, and that there was no need for it to be changed. It has since been lowered to 80 kilometres per hour, and drivers receive a €100 fine for every kilometre over the limit at which they travel. There are also additional penalties if a driver is found to have been speeding in the pit lane to gain a racing advantage. The limit is amended at certain rounds of the championship, such as Australia and Monaco, due to the tighter confines of the pit lane. Another new thing was suggested on this day in 2003, when it was reported that the FIA were planning to film and televise the pre-race meetings between the race director and the drivers. Max Mosley said it would be an interesting look inside the world of F1 and a more personal close-up view of the drivers. Ultimately, the idea was never carried out, but 14 years later, some of the driver briefings were filmed and appeared on F1's YouTube channel. While it proved to be a hit with fans, one of the issues with filming the briefings is that it had the potential to make the drivers more guarded and less reluctant to speak out. No footage of driver briefings has appeared online since 2017. And finally for today, on this day in 2004, Scott Dixon's mum, Glenys, claimed that he was close to signing an F1 deal. Yep, that's right, the 24-year-old New Zealander, in the next 2 months, was going to sign a deal with a strong team. Glenys' words, not mine. It's now been 16 years and he still hasn't signed it. At the time, Dixon was linked to Toyota, with a Japanese manufacturer believed to be interested in his services. He'd been spotted in the paddock in 2003, having meetings with Ferrari, Williams and McLaren. Later in 2004, he was given a test drive with Williams, and his times compared well to regular driver Ralf Schumacher. Dixon is surely one of the best drivers to have never raced an F1. He won the Indy 500 in 2008, and has been crowned IndyCar champion no less than 5 times. In a 2018 interview, Dixon said that he had no regrets over never getting a chance in Formula 1. I should probably mention, researching that led me to Autosport's list of the 50 greatest drivers to never race an F1. And there's some really interesting and really big names in that list. And when I say big, I mean like big as in long. Anyway, that's your lot for this week's episode of F1 Rewind. I'll be back next week with more tales from the F1 treasure troves. Have a good week, and I will see you then. Goodbye.